to episode 2 of the Triple Feature Podcast with me, Jillian Reck, and my co-host, Stephen Dendy, and Pedro Vargas. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
And we are talking today about movie quotes. We have each picked a movie that we have never seen, but we've always heard the quote from. So, I will start. I picked the quote, "I feel the need for speed," from Top Gun. Pedro, what did you pick?
I picked the movies The Graduate, and my quote is, "Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me."
That's and my quote. Stephen, what did you pick?
I picked Rayman's, the line from Rayman, now I'm blanking on it. What was it? I'm an excellent driver. Definitely an excellent driver.
Okay. And we have all watched these movies, and one of the things we wanted to talk about was when you hear quotes from movies you've never seen, you hear them over and over, what impression does it give you of the movie that you've never seen? Does it kind of put anything in your head that the movie is not about? Does it kind of ruin the movie? Does it take something away from when you actually do watch the movie? How do the quotes affect how you view the movie? So, I'll ask you guys first. What do you think about this?
I guess, should I start?
Yeah.
It's such a famous movie, I pretty much knew what the movie was about already. That quote really, I didn't need to, know the quote to know what the movie was about or what the quote was about without seeing it, it's such a famous movie, everybody, it's one of those, iconic movies.
Right.
Where, you already know what it's about. But, I knew that it had something to do with Dustin Hoffman's character, and, even in the quote, it says it, like, Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce, that woman seducing him, and
that's one of those quotes that pretty much sums up the whole movie.
Exactly.
It's pretty central to the theme. And the one that I picked too, Top Gun, I feel the need for speed. It doesn't really have much to do with the plot. It's just kind of in there. Right. It's a one-off, doesn't really have anything to do with what's going on at the time. It's just kind of like these guys' catchphrase. But it still does kind of encapsulate the movie in general. I mean, it's a popcorn movie. It's a blockbuster from 1986 with, it's a very testosterone-heavy movie. And it's about guys flying fighter jets. So, yeah, they have the need for speed, and that pretty much sums up the movie.
Necessarily about speed,
Right.
It's not like they're racing or whatever, It's
right.
not like...
But...
It's got nothing to do with speed. It's just... Yeah.
I think it sums up, like, their characters, their personalities. They're like, they're adrenaline junkies, and that's...
Right.
Pretty much. Yeah. And Stephen, you picked an interesting one, because... he says that line probably 8 or 9 times
right.
throughout the movie. I'm an excellent driver.
That's being generous.
It's not just, it's just not.
That's being generous.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone repeated their lines all the time, especially Tom Cruise. Even Tom Cruise was repeating everyone else's lines all the time.
Oh, God. Well, yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, he does it to sort of understand what.
Whenever Tom Cruise's character got flustered, got angry, especially when he first learned that his dad left the $3 million, he's like, I got the rose bushes. I definitely got the rose bushes. I got the rose bushes on it because I got the rose bushes.
I noticed that too with that scene. He started acting like Ray.
It wasn't just that scene. I think that scene was probably the most severe, but throughout the movie, whenever he got mad, whenever he got agitated, or, you know, something wasn't going the way, he would always repeat what was almost immediately said to him. Or like,
Doesn't Rain, Ray or Rain Man, doesn't he kind of do that as well? Like, he repeats certain things?
Yeah, and it makes me wonder if that was intentional.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Because Ray is Charlie's long-lost older brother.
Right.
If Raymond's speech patterns kind of rubbed off on Charlie at a young age, or if it rubbed off on Tom Cruise while they were filming, or if it was just an accident. You know what I mean? That's kind of interesting.
I felt like it was intentional. I mean, I'm not, it's not like I looked it up.
No, I didn't either.
It could have been overemphasized, because, you know, we do tend to repeat things when we get agitated or we're trying to make a point on something. You know, we'll repeat something for emphasis.
And I think Tom Cruise's character in that movie, like most of Tom Cruise's characters, are kind of an asshole.
He's a mega dick.
even in Top Gun, I was like, was it in his contract and for early Tom Cruise that all of his movies he had to play a dick?
Seriously.
I think that was all he knew how to play. If you can tell, I'm not really a big
Tom Cruise
fan.
He was just an angry yuppie in that one.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's exactly what he was, an angry yuppie.
Yeah, and
completely Italian.
And in Top Gun, he wasn't, he had attitude. Yeah, not necessarily angry all the time, but when he got angry, you could tell that.
Top Gun was interesting. I had never seen Top Gun.
No, me neither.
That was the one I picked. but I always thought, like, oh, I don't need to see Top Gun. It's a boy movie. It's just going to be a bunch of guys in planes, blah, blah, blah. Was not expecting the love story, which was pretty pathetic. Was not expecting the what can only be described as gay porn volleyball.
It did have a gay vibe.
The entire movie was a love story between Iceman and Maverick.
It was very
Goose and Maverick. Goose, they were like,
yeah,
they were more like brothers, I think.
But there was like a couple of moments where like Goose and Maverick were having a touching, almost romantic moment. But mainly the main tension was between Maverick and Iceman.
They were making
googly eyes in the classroom.
Seriously.
I mean, to the point where I was like, just kiss already.
Where like they're in the bar and like they stare like deeply into each other's eyes,
they get lost.
They get lost in their eyes.
Even before I had gotten into the movie, I wrote down flirting at the bar with Val Kilmer.
Yeah,
like, it's just very obvious.
But of course, who wouldn't? This is 80s Val Kilmer. This is when he was almost at his peak.
Yeah,
who wouldn't? Falconer.
But it's interesting to think about, like, old, it hurts me to call a 1986 movie old, but older movies, with stuff like that, was it intentional? Or were they just like, oh, this is normal, this is just guys, or was it intentional? You know what I mean? Because they would never come out and say back then, oh yeah, this is, a gay vibe. You know what I mean?
I think what they were going for was portraying, like, everyone of a fighter pilot has that alpha dog mentality of where, they're always up in your face, and they'll make the smirk.
And they're, like, in a school where they have to compete to be number one,
Exactly. Yeah. These are, like, best of the best of the alpha dogs competing to be the mid-alpha-alpha dog. So I don't think it was like intentionally meant to be a gay vibe. You can misconstrue it to be a gay vibe.
You know, they had to be young and I'm assuming,
virile.
Exactly. they work out because they need to, that's just in the job description, where they need to. Be fit,
Yeah. But I think in general, I just At first, I hated the movie. At first, I wanted nothing to do with it. I hated everyone involved. And over time, the movie won me over. By the end, I was, you know, I did shed a tear.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I was into it a little bit. And as soon as Meg Ryan showed up, I was like, oh, I can't hate this movie now. Yeah. Meg Ryan, she's like the least aggravating person in the movie. And she's in it for, like, two scenes.
There are certain things in it where you really do get involved with the story.
And I really liked the fact that...
And even what you would think is, you know, is just for guys or, like, what guys would be into, like, I think anybody would be into, you know, into it, you know, like...
Yeah.
Like, that whole dogfight scene where they're, like, practicing and up until the end, like, that's some pretty interesting stuff, you know, like...
Oh, yeah, movie-making-wise, editing it was amazing.
Because it
would be so easy... to get lost in what's going on with those planes up in the air.
Absolutely.
But they didn't lose us for 1 second. I knew exactly what was happening where in the sky.
I knew who was who,
and I think that's really hard to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, acting and plot aside, that was really well done. But I actually really enjoyed the fact that there was no bad guy, really. I mean, they try to make Val Kilmer or Iceman the bad guy at one point, but he's really just doing his job. You know, he's looking out for the safety of everybody.
I don't think I agree that they were trying to set him up as a bad guy. I think they were trying to set him up as an obstacle.
As a rival. That's
as a rival. Not necessarily like a bad guy.
Right.
But one that could be, like, you know, in a very generalized sense.
But I mean,
could be.
If there's any bad guy in this movie, it's the main character. It's Tom Cruise.
Yeah, this is you are your own worst enemy movie.
Yeah, he's an anti-hero.
Right. That's pretty much it.
His worst obstacle is himself.
Yes.
That's what I'm trying to say.
That's Top Gun. And then, Steven, you chose Rain Man, so what are your overall thoughts about it now that you've seen it?
Well, ultimately, I was like you with Top Gun. I at first I didn't like anybody in it, except for Dustin Hoffman's characters. And, you know, Dustin Hoffman, you just, no matter what he does, you just like him. But
yeah,
it was kind of confusing at the beginning because I didn't know what Tom Cruise's job was. You know, it sort of looked like he was trying to do like a. It was like a bowler.
It was like a car. It was like
some kind of Ponzi scheme with Lamborghinis or
it's
something.
It's not
I don't
clear.
Know.
It wasn't clear to me what exactly was going on. He has a lot of money wrapped up in these.
It's
cars.
Like right. It's like a detail.
It's also never resolved. It's never resolved. What happens is like you know he loses. Loses whatever deal he had, but then after that it doesn't. It just ignores.
Well, they resolve it because he makes the money back in Vegas, and then
that's true. Yeah,
it's implied.
Still, like,
that he put the money back into what he lost.
Yeah, but that's not the main theme in the movie. You know?
I kind of like that because the money becomes less and less important, and what becomes more important.
Right.
Yeah, true. But it was a bit of a hang up, just like leaving it just out there, just not no mention.
Yeah.
But it's still a detail. You know, it's not necessarily too important to. Want to know exactly what's going on with Tom Cruise's life and his career and all that. It's more about two brothers sort of connecting through this road trip kind of thing.
Yeah.
In fact, I would say, you know, if I was to take a crack at editing this movie, Rain Man, I would take out some of the stuff in the beginning about what's going on with him before he finds out his father dies. You know,
it goes on for a while.
I mean, I get that they're trying to establish, you know, that he's an asshole and that you know, he's clapping in his girlfriend's face while she's on the phone and, you know, like, just trying to get this deal. Like, I get, like, okay, we get that he's an ass.
They feel like that
goes on for too long.
It goes on for a while.
And they even had a scene of them in the car, like, right before he gets the call about his father dying, they basically have a scene about talking.
Yeah, she's like, complaining we never talk, and it's like a five-minute scene about not talking, and they're not talking. It's like, okay. We get it.
It sort of felt like the writers didn't know what to do.
It felt kind of ad-libbed a little bit. Those little scenes like that. So maybe, you know, They just kind of like, ah, just say whatever, make it, you know, make it look real.
Yeah.
And we'll use as much of it as we can for the final edit or whatever.
But, I mean, that's really the only bad thing I could say about this movie. I've seen this movie dozens of times. I love this movie. I'm not positive, but I think it won an Oscar or two. And if Dustin Hoffman didn't get an Oscar for this movie, he should have. I'll have to look that up later, but I absolutely love him in this movie. And Hans Zimmer, doing the music. This is one of my favorite movie scores.
Oh, really?
Of all time.
Oh.
I love this movie's music. Does a really, really good job. Other than that, I didn't write a lot of notes because I got into it because I love this movie.
Most of my notes were from the beginning. Those are like where most of the issues were, or not most of the issues, but most of like the observations.
Mm-hmm.
Like at the very beginning, I did feel like at one point it felt like this was like a sequel to Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It was like Ferris Bueller, adult Ferris Bueller, and adult Sloan.
Oh God!
At the very beginning, when he was trying to like he was trying to like weasel his way into trying to find out who was this mysterious benefit person that he always. And like he's going in and he's doing like some Ferris Bueller stuff to try to charm his way into the information. And then you have what's that girl's name?
Maybe that was like a big thing in the '80s, yeah. To charm people and like get away with things.
And the way she dressed just reminded me of how Sloane dressed in Ferris Bueller. And so I was like, is this
so the 80s?
At the very beginning?
She did have a weird way. Like she was wearing like Converse. Shoes,
yeah. Very 80s.
With MC Hammer pants, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very 80s.
But yeah, I mean, I could watch this movie again and again. I could talk about it all day.
Yeah. And I don't think I've ever seen this movie in its entirety. I think I've only seen it in bits and pieces.
Like
and
on TV? Seeing it.
Yeah, like on TV, and seeing it, and it's, you know, and how it ends, like, I didn't expect that ending at all, you know?
That scene with them at
the
table.
But it makes sense, though.
Yeah, the scene with them at the table at the end, it gets me every time.
I did know that this movie was sort of basically The Wizard. Remember the...
The Wizard Wishes it was this movie.
The Fred Savage Wizard. Yeah, no, The Wizard.
What came first?
Like a watered-down version. But yeah. it's essentially the same plot, almost. You know.
Other than the fact that there's a mentally disabled person in the movie, I'm gonna say no.
Not just that, but like they find that that their brother, who's mentally challenged, also has a gift. You know, is like a savant in one area, and he uses that to enter whatever thing to try to win something.
Kind of have that. Similarity to it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like,
you have to admit, it does have that.
Their brother's gift to advance in some way, to win something,
but in The Wizard, that's the main focus. I don't really think Vegas is the main focus.
Yeah, sure, it's not the main focus.
No, it's not, but there are similarities, you know what I mean?
They're similar, but I think different enough to be their own things.
No, definitely. I'm not saying like the repeat, I'm just saying it's like at the very end of it, I felt like I just, you know, it was almost like a different telling of that same story in a different way.
Yeah, pretty much. And then The Graduate.
They probably copied from it The Wizard movie.
Well, they were both made back to back. Not back to back, but like almost in the same time period. So I don't know. I don't know how much influence one had over the other.
All right. Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, anyway, The Graduate.
Yeah.
God, F this movie.
Steven, had you ever seen this movie?
You know, like...
I have never seen the movie. You know, all I know for the movie is the quote and the title. And from the title, I had imagined that this was going to be like a Dead Poet Society type movie. You know,
like a kid
in a boarding school, graduate school type setting. And it's like a school setting. And, you know, something's going to happen there. And it was nothing like the Dead Poet Society.
Nothing like.
No.
Not even in the same genre.
No, this movie is, I don't even know what you would call this movie. It's a big bag of craziness.
It's very just, 60s.
It's like comedy, like, it's a dramedy.
It is crazy, wrapped up in awkwardness.
I didn't even find it funny. I just found it disturbing, really.
Yeah.
There are parts of it that are very, very well done.
And funny, I mean, there were parts where Dustin Hoffman's awkwardness...
Yeah, there are funny parts, but overall I wouldn't call it a comedy, or I wouldn't find it funny enough to call it a
comedy. You know what? It reminded me a lot of a Wes Anderson movie.
I can see Wes Anderson being influenced by this kind of movie, definitely.
To me, this movie felt like one big experimental film. Like, they're trying to, you know, try out different storytelling methods, using visual metaphors for things.
There was a lot of interesting camera work.
Oh.
Exactly. They were experimenting. It was like a different way of doing cinematography. It was like a way of experiment.
I feel like everything had a purpose. That's how I saw it. Every shot, the music.
I mean, they bought the rights for that,
and they played the hell out of this music.
I think they didn't buy the rights to it.
It was written for this movie.
Yeah, it was specifically written.
Yeah, they wrote the music for the movie. The Mrs. Robinson song was written for this movie.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, is that the Simon and Garfunkel stuff, though?
Simon and Garfunkel, yeah, that was...
Yeah, like, they wrote it. Yeah.
The sound of, like, the sound of silence and all that was written specifically for this movie.
I'm not sure. I know the Mrs. Robinson song was.
In the credits at the beginning, it did say like songs written by that one person and music by Simon and Garfunkel. Yeah.
They are all very popular Simon and Garfunkel songs.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they were written for the movie. I know that song was. I don't know about the others. I was more on Dustin Hoffman's side in the beginning of the movie than in the end.
Yes.
The end, I just wanted to slap him.
Yes, I was the exact same way, because in the beginning, he's just like a regular college aloof, over his head, in a situation that's completely over his head.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know how to get out of it.
But then
at the end, he turns into a crazy, creepy stalker.
Yes, thank you.
I'm like, what is going on? You have been on one date with a girl, and already you are stalking her to want to marry her.
I mean, it does seem that way, like he's like this stalker. The thing is, I feel like he's always been controlled his entire life, and he just wanted change. And then all of a sudden, this whole thing with Mrs. Robinson occurred. At first, he was like, "No, I I'm not used to this. This is weird. You're one of my parents' friends, and I'm too young." But he's at that point in his life where he's really confused about his future, and like he doesn't even know what he wants. He doesn't even know what he's gonna do, you know. And then I think it's just that confusion sort of led to all of this. And this is where
I think he just snaps. I think he just snaps at a point and just goes crazy.
I'm with you.
I think he's more rebelling about that sort of like. You need to go to graduate school, and that's how it's going to be. I think this is just, he may not be admitting it that he's, like, rebelling, but, you know, it's something inside of him where
he's still with you on that, Pedro,
until the point where he brings Elaine, the daughter, into it.
I can agree with the rebellion, but then he takes it to like the nth degree of like just he like turns it up to an 11.
Yeah,
just like stalking this girl.
Yeah, but I think he really fell in love with her, and you know he'd only
known her for a short time. He went out on one date.
Well, I mean, taking the time period into account, I know it's not a terribly long time ago, but they did deal with marriage a little bit differently back then. You know, it wasn't always you marry for love.
I mean, the 60s.
You marry for convenience, you marry for you know, circumstances. Well, yeah,
that would explain why Elaine was marrying the doctor or whatever or whoever she was marrying. That would explain that, but it wouldn't explain why he is so obsessed with her, and then for some reason she runs away from her own wedding for this guy.
He's not obsessed. I would say I feel like, I mean, you know, he's really in love, but you know he can tell when he, you know, because you know he really felt that she fell for him too, like it, you know, there was, you know,
and I don't understand why anyone liked anybody.
It's love. I don't know. I mean, sometimes it's inexplicable. It just happens. I don't know. I mean, I don't. You know,
the only person that I like in this movie is Elaine.
Elaine is the only one
up until the end. Yeah,
what?
Up until the end, you know, how it ends, where she goes.
It turns into a mob fight. And
right, like, she becomes, like...
Well, I mean, I don't blame her.
She becomes crazy.
I don't blame her for going with him at all. I mean, yes, he was being stalkerish. Yes, he was being overbearing. But given like, what really she knows something. About her mother, given what we know, you know, given what we know about her mother, how her mother got married... And why? Yeah.
You know? he wasn't expecting all of this. I think it's just something that occurred, and it's like, I didn't mean to fall in love with you. It just happened, and I really do feel something towards you. I really want to marry you. Like it sucks that it had to happen this way, but you know, I really love you. Please,
it's an odd mixture of Mrs. Robinson putting him in a bad situation and forcing his hand. And him taking a little too far, especially I think he does take a little too far.
Everyone in this movie takes it too far.
Well, yeah,
he does.
He goes to Berkeley.
Like, no logic is involved.
By the way, I got a little laugh out of the fact that the his landlord in Berkeley is Mr. Roper from Three's Company, but.
Well, another thing I was going to ask, like, his, Hoffman's father in the movie, is that Mr. Feeney?
I think so, yeah. Very young.
Yeah, very young Mr. Feeney. I was like, Mr. Feeney?
Wait a minute. What?
Yeah, Mr. Feeney from Boy Meets World. That was Mr. Feeney, I think.
I don't think so.
I will look it up.
It looked like him. It sounded like him. I'm willing to put money on it.
I'm pretty sure it's him. What's the actor's name, Mr. Feeney?
I'm
going
to have to look that up.
I have no idea.
I'm actually... Please look it up. Someone please look
it up. I'm looking it up.
So we got Mr. Feeney and Mr. Roper.
Yes.
In the movie.
In the role of a lifetime.
Wait a minute. Is it? No. Oh, you don't look it up. Okay.
I'm looking it up. Hang on. But anyway, I mean, yeah. Filmmaking-wise, it's a very good movie.
I don't know about that.
It's good.
Visually,
I like
stylistically,
it.
It's very, very interesting. It's very groundbreaking. Plot-wise, I hate every character.
I don't know. Visually, stylistically, like that, I did find it as an experiment, but I don't think it succeeded all the time.
I mean, I felt like every shot... And everything had a purpose to
Yeah, they had a purpose, but I don't know if they succeeded in conveying the message in the best way possible. You know?
What message?
The scuba scene. That felt like I know what they were going for. Like, you know, everyone's pushing him to be. Everyone was pushing him, and he's in over his head, and he feels like he's drowning in like life general. But I felt like what they were trying, like that metaphor was not almost not as successful or taken into more ludicrous.
I think it was actually really successful because
I thought it was too. Yeah,
the first thing we see of him is him in front of a fish tank. He's under the water, and then we see him in this.
I didn't make that connection. Yet.
Yeah, we see him in the scuba gear, and his parents are literally pushing his face under the water. To the point where he just stays at the bottom of the pool. He just...
I got it. I just don't know
but
if it
But then, every other time you see him with water, he's floating on top of it. He's slowly coming out of being underneath. He's floating in the pool. He's figuring out how to survive in the water.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
No, again, I agree. You know, it's a good metaphor. I'm just, I just thought the way it was done just didn't quite work for me. I understand what they were going for, and I agree it's a good metaphor for what they were doing. I don't know if it's like the way it was shot or I don't know. Something about it for me just didn't.
It didn't click.
It felt like it could have been done better. You know.
I think you're not wrong. I think that part of that is just a difference in style that comes with time.
It could be.
Things right. were a lot slower. I mean, there's full scenes of nothing happening just so we can hear a song, followed by quick scenes of exposition where you're like, wait, what's happening? And then it's back to slow scenes of walking with an entire Simon and Garfunkel song.
I think it's more of like it's like they're putting you in his sad state kind of thing. And they're doing it in that style. Like, everything has that calm vibe to it with the Simon and Garfunkel music.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's kind of like this depressing sort of feel to it. And, you know, they're sort of putting you in his situation. Like making you sort of see and feel what he's feeling. So I think that's what they were trying to do, you know.
Yeah.
Like that one part where, you know, he's underwater in the scuba, and he's just, and then we, you know, it kind of pans away from him, and, you know, he's like by himself. He's, mm-hmm. you know, he's lonely underwater, like, there's all this blue, and, you know, maybe that blue around him is a metaphor of, like, you know, sadness or something. I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like I guess, you know, there's so many ways you can interpret it. But,
yeah, there really are.
But yeah, like, that's how I got. That's how I saw it.
It's just weird because, like I said in the beginning, I'm totally with him. And then there's a point where it just completely switches. And I just think, this guy is a creep. This guy is...
The thing is, and I felt that too. Like, I did feel like it was... getting kind of creepy, but then you really do, you know, I'm not an expert at love, you know, or anything. But,
I understand what made him do the things he did, but the fact that he did it the way he did it still makes him a creep either way.
Well, I think maybe that's got to do with how he grew up.
True.
Remember, his parents have always wanted the best for him, but in a way where they sort of forced him to be like the best.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's ever had proper guidance in his life to be, you know, you know, to treat people with respect. I mean, you know, he's a rich kid, you know. Yeah. And I feel like that's got something to do with it too.
Yeah.
The way he grew up. So I don't know.
I just really like the last shot, the last scene. They're in the bus, and they keep going from, like, giddy laughing to, like, this face of just, like, holy shit, what now?
I know.
And it just keeps going back and forth, and it's really haunting. Yeah. And
it's really... And the thing is, and you kind of see what they're thinking.
It's like they've gone from, you know, they were drowning in life to find out, like, okay, I know what I want to do. I want her. I want him. They accomplished that, and now they're back to, okay, well, what now?
Well, you know, I mean, think about it. Both of those families are going to completely cut them off.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, like you could see it in their expression. Like,
yeah, like, holy shit,
like,
we are fucked.
Like, oh my God, what did we do?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, we've disappointed our parents. Like, no one's going to help us. We're on our own.
Yeah. We Holy have each crap. Other, you know. Okay,
we have great. Each other, but fuck, we're like 21. We don't know what the hell we're doing.
Yeah.
Like we're not going to school. Like, she left her school, I think.
I think she finished.
She did? Okay, I don't know.
I could be wrong. She might still be going to school. I can't remember.
Well, they were the same age. Like, they were from the same high school or something. Or, like, they, I don't know, but
yeah.
Well, anyways, yeah. That ending. Yeah, that those expressions, that fluctuation of from ah, we're happy, and then oh crap, and then oh shit, what did we do? Yeah.
Right. The other thing about the ending that I kept thinking was how perfectly Wayne's World 2
oh my god,
copied it
so much.
Because when I first saw Wayne's World 2, I had never seen The Graduate.
Yeah, and like even like the smallest detail, like even the same gas station,
the gas station
uniform that the gas station attendant was wearing, like mm-hmm. everything.
Yeah,
him going through the tunnel with the music playing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they did that pretty successfully. Yeah,
it's been so long since I've seen any of the Wayne's World. I can't recall anything other than the Bohemian Rhapsody song that they do.
Oh, that's the first one. Yeah.
I've seen the first one a bunch. I've only seen the second one once, so I'm going to have to watch it again now.
Oh, whoa, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I think that one's on Netflix.
Maybe twice. But, but yeah, can you think of any other movies that have spoofed movies like that, like really, really closely like that?
Top Gun? Shots?
Movies like Wayne's World spoofed The Graduate. Can you think of any other movies like that?
Where a movie spoofed The Graduate?
No, like the way that Wayne's World spoofed The Graduate really perfectly. Can you think of any other times that happened?
I think that was all the end, because I think they were just not making fun. Like they were trying to imitate the end of The Graduate.
Yes, I know. I'm asking, do you know of any other movies?
No, I don't think so. Any other movie besides Wayne's World?
Yeah.
Oh. I think well, it's not a movie, but I think there was an episode of Daria that I remember where I feel like that happened.
I know lots of stuff I've done it before, I just can't think of any off.
Like that iconic ending where they both go into the bus and she's wearing the like I feel like I've seen that before, so not just in Wayne's World. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I know a lot of things have spoofed The Graduate.
Shows like Family Guy. You know, they'll do stuff like that all the time.
Yeah, I mean Family Guy's famous. For that.
But I can't. I'm sure there's other shows, other movies, but I can't.
I mean, Mel Brooks has done it a couple of times.
I just right now what I'm remembering is an episode of Daria where I think Daria, I don't know, two characters go into that sort of look of the bus.
Right.
And they then they're like in the back seat. And it's the exact same thing. I don't remember the characters, but I do remember that occurred in an episode of Daria.
Gotcha.
And anyway.
The other thing I found cool was that we picked two movies that had Tom Cruise and two movies that had Dustin Hoffman.
That is an interesting coincidence.
The two Tom Cruise movies were like a year after each other or two.
Oh, really?
He plays pretty much the same kind of asshole in both of them.
Yep.
In
The Rain Man, I actually noted he looks like a young Christian Bale in The Rain Man.
I can see that.
He's got the hair and the cheekbones, just sort of carves it down almost like a young Christian Bale.
Right.
Tom Cruise?
I'm assuming.
Okay.
And then, but the difference in Dustin Hoffman over, 20 years? Maybe a little less, is like staggering.
From The Graduate to Rain Man,
exactly. Yeah, he's just this young kid in The Graduate.
He's so young, but it's really, still really him, young. and it's still him though, and it's really weird seeing him with such smooth skin.
Yeah.
it's weird.
But that being said, like the age that he is in Rain Man, that's what I think of when I think of Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
Right.
That's probably just because that's when we were born, you know. But
I mean, the majority of I've never seen The Graduate. There was Kramer versus Kramer. I've never seen that later. Yeah, it's a good movie.
I mean, I think of The Rain Man. I think of Hook.
I think of oh God, what's it? A Tootsie.
Yes. Like Tootsie. Oh, I love Tootsie.
That's where he starts to, you know, turn into that Dustin Hoffman we all know, you know?
Right. And even now when he plays little parts, I mean, he's older, but he's still just Dustin Hoffman. You know, he still always plays some kind of variant of himself. He never goes too crazy with, you know, wacko characters or anything. He's usually pretty well grounded.
It's more, yeah, like he plays himself, but variations of him.
Right, right. Which I think is cool.
Wikipedia has Richard Dreyfuss as being in The Graduate.
And I did see him in there. He was one of the guys. He was the one that said, do you want me to call the cops to the landlord?
Really? I'm going to have to go back and look.
That was him, yeah. Oh,
and also Ben Murphy from MST3K.
I did see him.
He was in that?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think he was a guy who was like one of the, who was asking him to, or he was asking him to save some cake at the wedding. And was that him? It has him listed as shaving student. So he was one of the kids
shaving.
But I can't remember if that was him, the one who was talking
with the cake.
Yeah, but he was in that scene.
Oh my god, that's funny. Ben Murphy.
Oh gosh.
Oh, and that is Mr. Feeney.
And
another thing I wanted to mention was how much the movie Hot Shots took a lot from Top Gun.
Yeah. Hot Shots very heavily.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Hot Shots is a parody of Top Gun.
I've never seen it, so now I'm gonna have to check that out.
Oh my god, you have to.
Okay. And yeah, for about the week since I've seen Top Gun, Danger Zone has been on the radio probably every day.
Oh, weird.
I don't know if that's a coincidence. That's like a sign. But I can't get away from Danger Zone now.
You must love this movie. Yeah.
Once you watch Top Gun, you have essentially entered the Danger Zone.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah, you really did. We all did, I think.
And you know what? When it all comes down to it, you take my breath away, so...
I feel like that they played more that song than the Danger Zone.
A little bit of both, I think.
At the very beginning, Danger Zone takes it, and it's almost like an 80s music video for Danger Zone, but then towards the middle and the end, Take My Breath Away, they just really come back to that all the time.
Yeah, they do. I didn't really give a shit about, like, the love between what's
up. No, I did not either.
Like, it was totally unnecessary to the story, I felt.
It was like, the cheesiest lines, like, the whole falling for you dialogue.
And there's just, like, oh, can I take a shower? And it's like, what? Who does that? Who says that? What's wrong with you, Tom Cruise?
The romance in the movie didn't feel important.
It was, no. He was a little creepy too. Like, oh, yeah, he's a little creepy. Like when he followed her to the bathroom, like, who does that? Like, I would scream rape. I don't know, like, you know, like, he's creepy.
I think, like in The Graduate, even though it wasn't too long ago, you still have to take this movie in the context of when it was made. I think, especially in a military setting, it was just more normal for guys to be that way, and I think it's probably still is to a certain extent.
Probably.
You know, to kind of take control of their environment and kind of dominate women. And I think that scene is supposed to show you, like, how much of an asshole he is. So, yeah, like, no, it's not right for him to do that, but he did, you know.
I guess
the whole time, like the romance just felt to me like not special. You know, like we know that he's a womanizer, so it's like, why is this one special? You know, it felt very temporary.
I guess,
yeah, they never gave us a reason for why she's special.
Probably, I guess it's some, you know.
Other than Meg Ryan outright saying he's in love with you, I would never have gotten that impression.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. Me neither. Like, I'm like, what? Yeah. Okay.
So, I don't know. Like I said, I'm not a fan of Tom Cruise.
I do love that Principal Skinner is a boat captain.
Yes. He does the exact same line in Back to the Future as he does in Top Gun.
It's the same character. It's basically the same character. I'm like, is this what he does during the school summer? He's not transforming in the summer. He just comes after for a boat captain.
He trains the nation's best airline pilots. Fighter pilots.
And a lost art? Was this really a lost art, this fighter?
I mean, how could it be a lost art? They just learned how to fly like 40 years ago.
It was just... Why is he asking who's up there flying? This is your ship with your planes on it. How do you not know who's flying your planes?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it's to add, you know, like... Oh, he's pissed off at him, and Maverick, and you're supposed to love Maverick because he's, like, rebellious type, and
also, you're rooting for him. I got really mad towards the end. This is probably really stupid. I got really mad towards the end of Top Gun when he throws Goose's dog tags into the ocean. Like, maybe his wife would have fucking wanted those.
Exactly. See, that's one of those visual metaphors. That, you know, you get what they're trying to do. Like, throughout the whole movie, they're like saying, you have to let go of them. You have to let go of them. Move on. And that's supposed to be a visual metaphor for it. And, like, when it actually happens, you, like, it doesn't make sense of why you would do that.
Oh, this movie.
But that's what I meant for in The Graduate. Like, it's a visual metaphor. Like, I understand what they're doing, but it just doesn't work for me for some reason or another. Yeah.
I mean, it's pure Hollywood.
Oh, yeah. This movie is... Top Gun was pure popcorn.
Absolutely.
And where does Goose keep that camera in the cockpit? Big, clunky Polaroid camera.
How is he even allowed
to put that in the plane?
Oh. Is it normally... Because I don't know anything about, like, cockpits. Are they normally not that spacious?
First of all, everything has to be strapped down because you're going upside down, so you can't have anything loose.
Yeah, sure.
And yet he is able to carry this big 80s clunky Polaroid camera. That's like the size of your face.
My first thought in the very beginning of the movie was, where's Porkins? Because they kept showing everyone just with their helmets with their names on them.
Yeah.
And I just felt like this should be a Porkins.
Right. Yeah. Oh, well. Tis fun.
Yeah.
Do you guys want me to mention the time?
Well.
Oh, yes. Right. You guys know. What am I saying?
Yeah, we're getting there. We're almost at an hour. We'd like to keep these to an hour.
Okay.
So I will put this question to anyone listening, and you can comment on our website. What are some movie quotes from movies that you have never seen that you think give you an idea of what the movie's about? Or, you know, what is a quote that you heard and then saw the movie, and how did that affect the movie you were watching, or anything like that? What did you think of these three movies, if you've seen them? And just let us know what you're thinking. You can find us at triplefeaturepodcast.wordpress.com. Leave us your comments, check out our website, and we will be back next month. Is there anything else you guys would like to say?
No, I mean, I felt like I think I've covered pretty much what we for each movie. I feel like we covered it pretty well.
Pretty much covered this one.
Yeah.
Steven?
I'm good.
All right. Well, then we will see you next month on the Triple Feature Podcast. Have a great night, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
I feel the need for speed.
Ow! I'm an excellent driver.
Of course, I don't have my underwear.
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me.